Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, how y'all doing? I'm like a whole lot of minutes late. There's something personal that happened. Just pray for me. I'll just try to do the remainder of this show with no problems. We are looking at the news today, and it's not any different from the news that you might be sitting down and watching a prior revolution in Iran. There's been news that have been hot in previous decades, like the civil rights movement, which we could have said, well, this is the end times, you know. Jesus is coming back in 5 minutes. You know, you could have did that, but few people that was in World War II. But see, we know for a fact that 1948 Israel was a nation. And we also know that there's no way in the world that 20 years later the generation end, which would cover the civil rights movement, or most of it, to bring it to 1968. But what we do know for a fact is that from 1948 to 1988 was 40 years. How many people remember the book 88 Reasons Why Jesus Christ is going to come back in 5 minutes? Well, it wasn't called that. I'm just adding my emphasis is mine. Well, we know for a fact that Jesus Christ can come back in 40 years. Now, are there any 50-year generations? Yes, there are a few 50-year generations in the Bible. Are there 60 years? Not too many. Are there 70 years? Well, now you're starting to get into the number that God calls a number of completion. So 1948 to 2018 is a 70-year generation. But that is not the reason why you see the things happening on TV, because these things have been happening for ages. But when you put in the generation mathematics, and it's not even special mathematics, it's just, I'm just saying, when you put in 70 years from 1948 to 2018, you get 70 years. So, the things that we are watching on TV makes it look a lot more interesting. Now, are there any 80-year generations in the Bible? Are there any 90-year generations? Are there 100 years? There's 100-year generations. So we are close to things progressing. Now, the Iranian confrontation can go anywhere. I will have to wait on further instructions from above to find out, you know, that my eyes are open so I can see what's going on with this Iranian thing, because this thing can blow over in about a week and nothing come out of it, or it can explode to something major in the coming time. That's the way the cookie crumbles. I have this DNC tape. I want to see what's on it. I have no idea. Hold on for a second.
Yeah.
like bumper music. Wow, cool. Bumper music. Now, I will be loving for someone to call in because I can test this. I can test this voice. I could test the call in gadget because somebody tried to call in yesterday, but I do believe that they're pretty much what is it called? They're ready for a fight, and I don't have a screener, so that makes for things to be even harder to analyze. So nobody's expecting me to have this show because it's past the time I'm supposed to have it. Let's listen to Ron Paul, see what he has to say.
I want to actually bring in Congressman Ron Paul. In fact, Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner is on Capitol Hill right now trying to sell the president's massive financial overhaul plan. Geithner is testifying before the Senate Banking Committee. And moments ago, Geithner said that the government has to act now to protect the system from another potential collapse.
We came into this crisis without an adequate set of tools to confront and deal with the potential failures of large, complex financial institutions. That left the government with extremely limited choices when faced with the failure of the largest insurance company in the world and some of the world's largest investment banks.
Now, later today, Secretary Geithner is actually going to head over to the other side of the Hill to testify before the House Financial Service Committee. And our next guest is one to watch when that happens. Republican Congressman from Texas, Ron Paul, joins me now live. He'll be questioning Secretary Geithner this afternoon. Congressman Paul, good to see you, sir.
Thank you.
Congressman Paul, so is your perspective that Tim Geithner needs to dramatically change his approach at this point? We've seen Paul Krugman and other economists say the worst thing that could happen right now is for the government to ease up on the stimulus and other things, that it could lead to another crash. What are your thoughts?
Well, it would be good to stimulate the economy, but you don't stimulate it by doing the same things we've done for 20 years. And the policies that gave us our trouble can hardly be the solution. So spending more money and borrowing more money and inflating the currency it will not solve the problem. They're making the assumption that it was a lack of regulations that caused our trouble. And yet we had banking regulators, and we had SEC regulators, and FDIC regulators. We had a ton of regulations, and they failed. So they say, well, we just need more. It's sort of like what the outcome of Enron was. We passed Sarbanes-Oxley. Now they're trying to repeal Sarbanes-Oxley because it contributed to the problems of the early part of this decade. So I would say they're on the wrong course, and to me it's very, very disturbing that they have no confidence in the free market, and they have no interest whatsoever at looking at the root cause, and the root cause is easy credit, artificially low interest rates, inflating the currency, excessive spending, excessive debt, too much taxes, and they're going in the wrong direction.
Okay, and that made a lot of sense. That was Ron Paul, Congressman Ron Paul, the only person with exception, maybe one or two, with Dennis Kucinich, maybe one or two other people who makes a logical sense. And he was just saying that you can't cure the problems of the ills that we have as far as the problems we've been having and the reason why we're in this economic shape by spending money. He says go back to get some whole financial practices, and that's the only way you're going to solve these things is to go back to good home practices. I wanted to play this last abortion tape. Hold on. Here we go.
1% of all American abortions are hard case categories. This includes rape, incest, and the life of the mother being in danger. 1%. That hardly justifies the disturbing volume of abortions that happen these days. And who's to say abortion's the easy way out? I don't think people understand the effects of abortion on a woman. I don't have time to list all the negative after effects, but here are a few examples of the physical. 17% of women who've had abortions face complications in their subsequent pregnancies. Some may not even be able to give birth at all. They are also at a greater risk of developing breast cancer if they have an abortion. But perhaps the worst effects are the emotional ones. Women who've had an abortion tend to have more mood disorders substantial enough to provoke them to harm themselves. In addition, women who've had an abortion are 5 times more likely to have problems with drug and alcohol abuse. Abortion leaves a woman feeling lost and uncertain about their future. Almost 1/3 of all women who've had abortion are dissatisfied with their decision. It certainly is not the cure-all people think it is. I read a story on the Focus on the Family website. It was about a girl who had an abortion. She writes, "I had an abortion at the age of 17, and it was the worst thing I ever did. I would never recommend it to anyone because it comes back to haunt you. When I tried having children, I lost 3. Something happened to my cervix during the abortion." Sharon Osborne. Hers is just one of the many heart-wrenching stories that nobody tells these days, and those same ones are the ones that we need to hear about. Thank you for taking time to think about the issue of abortion, to think about the unborn, and to think about the effects of abortion on a mother. If you walk away with anything after this speech, walk away with the words of Horton. You know him, that elephant that risked his life to save that little speck. Remember him and his famous quote. Even though you can't see them or hear them at all.
Okay. This little girl's pretty wise, ain't she? I was listening to Linda LaRouche about food.
We are now in such a situation. For many parts of the world, the lack of food is an immediate reality. There is a growing explosion throughout much of the world over this food shortage issue. The rate of food shortage is increasing because the stocking from various food stores, annual stores, has been already delivered, and there's not enough. So as the fact that the empty warehouses and equivalent forms of supplies, as these things go down without food, the food crisis is going to accelerate. And you're going to have not only other parts of the world, but also American citizens. We're now faced with a threat of death by food shortages. So therefore, the issue here is not the election result. The issue is not the president. Obama's not competent to be a president. There's none of the makings of competence. They don't want Obama. They just want to use him to destroy Hillary Clinton. That's all. Once they destroy Hillary Clinton, they'll get rid of Obama. That's their intention. And their intention is to bring in a fascist regime in the United States, a presidency which will be, in effect, a fascist regime, which will cooperate with the British to bring the United States into alliance with the United Kingdom, all the Anglo-Dutch liberals. Not all Brits are for this, by the way. But
okay, Linda LaRouche seems to give a lot of credence to Britain. I do believe, I don't agree with that 100%. I believe that the globalists are really not particularly a part of any individual state, meaning in the United States, Britain, Australia. These globalists are on an island to themselves, meaning not literally, but I believe that they don't represent any governmental body. I don't think they take pride in any governmental property. If that was the case, then they wouldn't have ever been trying to destroy Britain. I believe these guys are internationalists who believe in world government. So when Lyndon LaRouche tries to point out, and I like this guy, but when he tries to point out that Britain, these oligarchies are from Britain, some of them are, I'm not saying they're not, but I don't think they're somewhere in Britain trying to destroy the whole world or trying to bring the world. Now, I do try to believe that the globalists are trying to bring all the countries and consolidate power. Because when you look at it in the scope of spiritual realm, Satan just wants to consolidate power. Now, he might use a particular country as his seat, so he can organize other countries. But I don't think he takes to having the British Empire as the standout. Now, Iraq, if anything, which is the old Babylonian Empire, will eventually be that place where he sits. Now, in Revelation, it says that he does have a in one of the churches, but that doesn't mean he is ruling from that. See, because Satan's still in the third heaven, believe it or not. You have the first heaven with God the Father, you have the second heaven, and you got a third heaven, so he's still up there. And I'm pretty sure he has his condo apartment fixed up and looking nice. So I'm going to try to do, I'm changing the subject, I'm going to try to do a show sometime in the near future this morning sometime for you, since I was so late. And I apologize once again for being late. And this is sort of not a full show, so I'm going to try to...